You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, and it's free. So download it. Take us with you wherever you go. You'll never miss a moment of the show, because you'll miss moments like this when we get a chance to speak to a man who knows a thing or two about the NFL, and more specifically, the salary cap. He joins us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. He is Joel Corey from CBS Sports. Joel, how are you, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How you guys doing?
We're good. We're trying to sift through this CBA and figure out, is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Some players seem to be very vocal about how much they do not like it. Demora Smith seems to like it. He agreed to it. Now, from your perspective, you've talked about there should be a level of concern about how badly the NFL wants to get this done. Why should they be concerned about that?
Yeah, that would kind of raise my antenna initially, because the CBA does not expire until after the upcoming 2020 league year. The fact that they are talking and have gotten to the point where there is a proposal on the table the owners think is worth accepting is surprising, because I never thought they'd get to that point. Now, if I'm a player, I'm thinking I may have a little bit of leverage here, because they really want this buttoned down and wrapped up so then they can turn their attention to the TV deals, and I'd want to make sure that I've gotten everything I can from the owners before agreeing to anything.
Well, let me ask you this, Joel. As far as, you know, the 48.5%, that's pretty good. I mean, what are give us some of the things you do and don't like. You know, I guess if I was a player, so I played in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, and we just talked to Paul Moyer, a guy who I played with, and it's like, you know, at the end of the year, it's 20 games you pretty much played, because we all played in the preseason. You know, it wasn't like the Rams when they just sat out. And, you know, so the extra game, I think – probably wouldn't have bothered me that much, but that seems to be the sticking point for the players. And then the other thing is, and I feel like they're going a little bit too far on the weed thing. I feel like they're going to give up something in return for getting the marijuana. But what are some of the sort of sticking points that you see along the way? Because there's a lot of detail in this.
Well, it's really the 17th game, because if the league is talking about overall health and player safety, it's a little contradictory that, okay, we want a 17th game, and then you're going to cap salaries for the 17th game at $250,000. So if you're Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, or any high earner, why should you have to play a 17th game for less than you did the other 16 games? To me, that's an easy give for the owners. I don't like the fact that the deal's 10 years long. What other sport has a 10-year-long collective bargaining agreement? The NBA has had shorter agreements where they've had an out after a few years. I understand you want labor peace and stability for the TV deals, but a lot can change over a 10-year period. Yes, there are a lot of good things for the rank-and-file players in terms of minimum salaries going up, better benefits, benefits for better benefits or new benefits for retired players. That's great, and I think that's why whenever they take a vote, it's going to pass, because the rank and file have different concerns than the stars or superstars have, and we've seen that play out in other sports. In the NBA, the reason you have a mid-level salary cap exception and salary maximums is because the rank and file outnumber the superstars.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Joel, you think this is going to get settled this week, or you think it's going to be an extended period of time?
No, I'll probably get settled this week, but I would look to what happened in 2006 as a potential guide, that they were trying to hammer out a new CBA before the start of free agency, and they delayed the start of the new league year for 72 hours and then had another 72-hour delay and ultimately started the league year about a week late in order to get the CBA all hammered out, because the league doesn't want to play under the 2020 rules in the last year of the current CBA, because there are some onerous things cap-wise. That you do have use of franchise and transition tag, but how you structure contracts gets limited because of a 30% rule, which increases how much you can go up year to year. As long as you have the rules for the last CBA year in place, if you have a new CBA, that stuff goes all out the window and it's back to business as usual as has been the first 9 years of this current CBA.
Joel, what do you think of the job that Demora Smith does?
Well, personally, I wouldn't have given him a chance to do another deal after the deal he did on this current CBA. I also have a little bit of concern about someone who's a litigator by trade, because litigators are more combative and not used to consensus building, but they reelected him, so you have to live with the choice you made.
Well, sorry, Dave, just quickly in terms of this deal, it just seemed from the outside we're looking at the fact that he agreed to a deal with the owners, and then you hear some of the leaders, whether it's Richard Sherman, J.J. Watt, Tyler Locke, just various guys around the league saying, no way, this deal's terrible. Now, we haven't heard from everybody, but it just seems like he sort of flew in the face of what maybe a majority of his constituents want. Any concerns with that?
Well, the thing which was surprising to me was the executive board voted 6-5 against it.
Right,
we'll see
right.
What the player reps do. You get a simple majority of the player reps, then it's going to go to a vote for the rank and file. And given that the rank and file are low-income earners, rookies, don't make a ton of money by NFL standards, but a lot by real life standards, because all NFL players do, then I suspect you'll get the simple majority if you get a vote from the 2,000 or 1,900 or however 2,100 players that are going to be voting. But one thing that's different than the NFL is different than the NBA is in the NBA, the agents are more in the loop, and it's more of a collaborative effort in trying to get the consensus or opinions of agents since they talk to their players, whereas the NFL doesn't have that type of relationship with the agent community.
Yeah, you know what? I noticed that in the last time around. And you mentioned that, Joel, the last time, based on the job that DeMaurice Smith did, that you wouldn't have him as a leader. What was it specifically? Because I think I know what my answer is. But tell me what it is about the last deal that he did that would not want you to have him as the leader.
Well, he took a lot of steps backwards from the previous CBA. One, the percentage was basically 50-50 split on the last one. Now you went to 46-47% is the split. I don't like the 4-year spending minimums. It should be a shorter period because you could – in this one, it's 89% of the cap and cash over a 4-year period. So you can do like Dallas has done or Indianapolis, not spend money in the fourth year, spend a ton of money, and you hit your spending minimums. I don't like the fact that if you're going to have a spending minimum, it's based off of the league-wide cap, not your adjusted cap, since you can carry over cap room from year to year. So the Niners this year had like $240 million as their adjusted cap. And Cleveland's a team which every year is first or second in cap room they can carry over, but they don't necessarily have to spend all that cap room. The NBA, use it or lose it each year. The period really should be no more than 2 years, plus the 89% spending minimum is too low. That's just a couple of things that I didn't like.
Yeah, I guess what I didn't like is that it just seemed from, 30,000 feet that they didn't go get more money and they got less practice time, which I just thought was not very valuable. I mean, there was a lot of things that they could have negotiated for that they just didn't get, and they came away like they were champions of the deal by getting less practice time. I just thought that was silly. I mean, the point is, and so for this one, I mean, if you're going up to 48.5%, I mean, at least that's something. I mean, that's a pretty good deal business-wise for these players. But the other thing you mentioned is for – these guys, who are the – do we have like a list of who are the reps? Because you're going to get different concerns from different players. I mean, if you're an older player, you're going to be more about retirement and less hitting in practice. If you're a younger guy, you're going to be more about getting money. Do we have a pretty good idea of where – how sort of the age group of the each team's representative is?
I saw a list the other day, and what I noticed was that – there was two quarterbacks on the list and only one starting quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. And there wasn't a lot of star players, like Thomas Morstead, the Saints punter, was one of the guys, Adam Vinatieri, the Indianapolis kicker, their rep. So it's a cross-section of players, but I was surprised that there weren't as many superstar players because, again, looking back at the NBA, for years historically, the stars have been a lot of the guys who are on the the board, the player board, player rep board, and our player reps. And that's not necessarily the case with the NFL. You've got a couple of hardline ex-Seahawks who are on the executive committee, but I don't know if their voice is going to rule the day.
Hey, Joel, the free agency free-for-all starting about 3 weeks now, March 18th, and a lot of interest here in Seattle with Jadeveon Clowney. What would you pay him if you're an NFL GM, and if that figure is different from what you think he's going to get, if you could also give us that as well?
Oh, yeah, they're two different things. One, he hasn't lived up to being the first overall pick, even though he's been a very good player. And he should be commended for not shutting it down last year when he could have and worried about free agency because of the core injury, because that did affect how he played. But what you paid Frank Clark, he's probably going to want more. What you didn't want to pay Frank Clark, I should say, he's probably going to want more than that. And if I'm a team, the Seahawks, I don't want to go that high. I really don't want to go any higher than Trey Flowers, which is like $18 million a year. But Trey Flowers had a very player-friendly structure. I wouldn't want to do that. And Seattle typically doesn't guarantee the second year of a salary at signing, but has an earlier vesting date than most teams. So he got that clause not to be able to be franchised for a reason. I suspect somebody's going to pay him close to what he wants, if not what he wants, on the strength of him being a fairly productive number one overall pick, and he was phenomenal in that Monday night game. I said after that game, he just made himself some money and didn't matter what he did the rest of the year.
He was also a guy who was still impactful. Again, sack number is not where you wanted him, but he's playing with a sports hernia of some sort of core injury. He had surgery, yet played through it. So how far, when GMs and head coaches and people like that are aware of a guy gutting out an injury that will require surgery, is that a selling point to them? Do you feel like that ups the value maybe a little bit more?
You know, it depends on how you play. Agents don't want players to play through any injury which could potentially affect free agency, because you put it out on tape. Sometimes the presumption is, well, if you're healthy enough to play, you're healthy. Even though it was very clear that the Clowney from the Monday night game was not the Clowney you had the rest of the year. So we'll kind of see. I don't think it's going to affect him in terms of what he's going to get contractually, because you're paying him for what you expect him to do on a go-forward basis. The question is, how much do you pay for disruption, pressuring the quarterback versus sacking the quarterback? He's a perfect test case for that.
Yeah, Joel, I just sit there and I go, you know, the defense wasn't that great with him anyway, and I kind of favor let him go if you can find a couple of prototypical pass rushers who might be able to get you 8 to 10 sacks a game.
Well, pass rushers are going to be in high demand because most of the best ones aren't going to be available. The one I'm curious to see is the Dante Fowler, who finally had close to the year you've been expecting for him being a high pick, is going to get franchised or not. Matthew Judon will get franchised. Ngui, Jaguars will get franchised, which only helps Clowney in terms of his demand, particularly if Fowler is franchised, then he's really going to be the best guy out there.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, some of these pass rushers that'll probably never hit the market. Kind of a general question for you, Joel. How do you think this gambling thing's going to play out? Because one of the things, I know that they put verbiage in there, the players did in this new deal, that, you know, all of the revenue that they, whatever percentage it is that they get, if it's 47%, 48.5%, is going to include the income from that. It's just so weird to me because the NFL has been so anti-gambling, you know, for so many years, and now you've got a team in Las Vegas, and there's talk about being like betting outlets right there at the stadium. How do you think that plays out? But good or bad?
Well, it's going to be, it's the wave of the future. So the players need to be very careful in making sure that they explicitly define what that amount of revenue is and what exactly they're getting. The revenue split up in different buckets. You get 55% of TV money. You get less for local revenue and other aspects. I want a higher percentage of gambling revenue than some of the other ones, because that could be an emerging, exploding market. Well, gambling's been around forever. It's really surprising that the league is embracing Las Vegas. And I think you're going to have every team have some sort of gambling affiliation or sponsorship, whether it's with MGM, the Station's Casino Group, or whatever. So it's here to stay, and it's the wave of the future.
Hey, another guy we're wondering about just in terms of value on the open market, Jermaine Ifedi is a guy that is available. I mean, he's in terms of being present every game. He's durable. He's there every game. I don't think he's a great player, but he's not the worst either. What do you think a guy like that commands? I'm not sure how the league views him, and maybe they've got a much more favorable opinion of him. But what do you think Jermaine Ifedi commands out there on the open market?
Well, you didn't pick up a fifth-year option for $10.35 million, so that speaks volumes to me about what Seattle thinks about him. Seattle hasn't had the best offensive linemen, but somehow some of those guys have gotten paid more than they probably should have. I don't know if that applies to him. I hope he doesn't look at the DJ Humphreys deal and think that's where I need to be, which is in the $14, $15 million per year neighborhood. If so, then he's probably going to price himself out of the market. If he sets his sights probably lower than the fifth-year option, then he could have some pretty significant action, because last year it was at a lower level, but a former Seahawks interior offensive lineman, James Carpenter, did better than I thought he would do.
What do you think of him as a player, though, Ifedi? Do you think he's average, a little above? Where would you sort of rank his skill set?
I would say serviceable.
Okay. Well, not that great of an endorsement there, Joel. What about Jaron Reed? That's another high-profile free agent here, and he was on Twitter a few weeks ago saying that he was almost like offended when people were talking about $10 to $12 million for him, and yet he didn't have that good a season coming off the suspension. Where are you with Jaron Reed?
He screams one-year prove-it deal to me, because he's probably thinking Grady Jarrett money was what he wanted when that deal was done. I don't think he's lowered his sights. Who's going to pay him that off of what he did last year? The suspension just derailed his season. You had a couple of years ago Sheldon Richardson, who had to sign a one-year deal for $8 million before signing a long-term deal at like $12, $13. Reed's made like $4.5 million through his 4 years in the NFL. You paid Ziggy Ansah a base of $9 million, and he didn't make off because some of that was tied to per game roster bonuses, with upside to like 13.5. We didn't earn any of the upside, so maybe you bring it back on a 1 year deal and you use that as a foundation, because I don't think he gets the long term type of deal that he's looking for, which will force him to go into a fairly lucrative 1 year prove it deal.
Hey, Joel, I saw on Twitter that you had a story about the quarterbacks that are available out there, and talking about Phillip Rivers, Jameis Winston, all these guys, Tom Brady, too. And are you projecting that he's going to get a $100 million deal from somebody and he's going to play another 3 years? Because I keep waiting for Brady to not be very good anymore. And at the age of 43, history tells us that probably will be this year.
No, a lot of people misread what I wrote. I said this is what they should target or aim for. So read carefully what I write. This is what I would be looking for if I'm the agent. I don't think anyone's going to pay 3 years at a high price for a quarterback who is 43 in uncharted territories and never had a starting quarterback as old as Tom Brady, and Father Time catches up to everybody. I think the Patriots, if he goes back there, would be willing to pay him like 60 to 65 on a two, guarantee the first year, part of the second. But if I'm the agent, I'm asking for 100 over three with the first 2 years guaranteed.
Okay, got you on that. Thanks, Joel.
Hey, Joel, thanks so much for taking time with us. We always appreciate it and look forward to talking again at some point.
Sure, anytime. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Joel Corey of CBS Sports, salary cap expert, former agent.
Yeah, I got to make sure I read.
Yeah, apparently you
listen,
were not
pay attention, Jim.
Sorry.
What a ringing endorsement on Jermaine Ifedi, right?
Yeah, serviceable. Yeah, I like to think that at some point somebody had that rating on me as a player.
Serviceable?
Yeah, he's serviceable. So I'm looking at some of the things. One of the things he mentioned, which I had not found this list before, but just as an example, for the Seahawks, the representatives are K.J. Wright and Bobby Wagner. And the reason why, you know, I think that matters is, look, if you're a veteran, you don't care about the rookies. You don't care about the guys coming in, right? And that's why, you know, in 2011, they did that thing with, you know, the first 4 years of controlled you know, guys were getting $40 million back then.
Oh, for Curry, the, you're talking for the rookies.
Sam Bradford.
Yeah, Sam Bradford got the last big, big deal.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I remember seeing Matthew Stafford. He cashed in on a lot of that and then, you know, still able to get the prices that, you know, that they're getting now. I mean, shoot, we got Russell Wilson for, what, $600,000, something like that, you know. So, and that deal would have been negotiated after 2 years, you know, whatever thing he signed as a rookie. So, you know, they don't care about the younger guys if they're a bunch of veterans. But it also, you know, it looks to me like that there are a lot of younger guys that are part of the union. And so, you know, maybe that will help benefit those guys. So it was like Moyer said, I have to say, and I'm not trying to sound like we were so benevolent, but we really were fighting for the rights of the guys that came before us. You know, in the Air Force, they have a saying that we stand on the shoulder of giants. And, you know, that's to me, I mean, those 87 guys, and I'm not talking about myself because I got some of the free agency years, you know, and they offered the 401k and stuff like that. But for a guy like Kenny Easley, you know, with health problems and just never got a chance to, you know, have free agency or anything like that and went on strike and lost four game checks. I mean, those are guys I feel like they should take care of, you know, guy like Jim Brown, you know, guys that are, you know, that have come and gone, some of them too, that, that, you know, kept that league together for a long time. But, you know, you're only going to get that perspective from the former players, not from the guys that are representing this. So it's just interesting how different views, guys at different points in their career or their lives are probably going to have different concerns.
Well, we'll see. They're supposed to meet at the Combine this week, so we'll see what comes out of that. Meanwhile, the Mariners have a lot to be excited about in their young prospects right now. We're going to hear from Jerry Dipoto about what they've seen from him so far in spring training. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. Our thanks to Joel Corey for joining us in the previous segment, going over the CBA and what he thinks some of the Seahawks free agents might command out on the open market.
Meanwhile, I just wish Jim would read articles more closely.
I'll work on that part of my game there, Dave.
All right.
Hey, kinda,
you know what I would have said?
If not everybody's perfect, Jim.
Yeah. Yeah. He gave me a hard time. I had it coming. That's all right.
I would have said, Jim, if I was you, I would have said, hey, you know, it just wasn't that clear. And if you want me to look over your articles from now on, I can help you out with that, make it a little bit more clear to the reader.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't have gone over very well with him.
Yeah. You could have said, I lost interest after the first paragraph.
Can I ask you, since when do you care?
Yeah. Well,
that anybody gets riled up by your comments?
You're supposed to be nice to the guests because they're taking time to come on the show.
Yeah. He was fine. He was.
I wasn't offended by that. I just heard worse.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have, Jim.
Speaking of that, I think we're going to hear from somebody like that.
Yeah.
I see Jerry DePoto's name.
Jerry DePoto, Jim Moore's biggest fan, speaking as.
That's just not true.
Yeah, it's not. It's not at all. He talked about a few different things. Kikuchi pitched over the weekend. I watched it. He started out okay. He got behind hitters, but he was able to battle back. Looked like he had really good velocity, and then the wheels kind of came off. And you look at the box score, it doesn't look great. It doesn't look great. But DePoto was encouraged by what he saw in that outing.
Couldn't have been more excited. You know, we went in and didn't quite know what to think. We've seen a real cleanup in his mechanics. His arm stroke is definitely shorter than the last time we saw him. He put in a lot of hard work at driveline this offseason and communicating with our new pitching coach, Pete Woodworth, who's been terrific in the way he's connected with the guys. And we saw a big step forward in quality of fastball yesterday, operating in the mid-90s, touch 96, considerably more velocity than we saw from Yusei really at any point last year. And the quality of his breaking ball, you know, the snap on his slider, he was throwing his slider anywhere from 89 to 91 miles an hour in a short, tilty version. And then he had more of a curveball, you know, shapey or shapely looking slider that he was throwing 85, 86. And I know the line score wasn't quite what you're looking for, but at the end of the day, in a spring training game in Arizona, you're going to get some numbers on the board every now and then. I thought he threw the ball great, and we were very encouraged.
That's a hard part about spring training, especially with pitchers, because we hear it over and over and over again about they're working on something specific. With him, maybe it's just straight mechanics. He stopped that pause. Remember, he'd get to the top of his windup and kind of pause there. That's gone now. So it's a matter of him working through and perfecting the mechanics, so they're not really looking at the results. But as a fan, you sit back and you go, okay, oh boy, his box score, he got lit up a bit. And you look at, you know, Marco today gave up, I think, 5 runs in a very short amount of time. You know, 5 earned runs, not a good, but they're working on things. So that's kind of the weird.
It's what you hope.
That's the conflict with spring training numbers is you go, okay, yeah, this isn't what we expect to see in the regular season because they're very specific about a pitch or their mechanics or there's just something really specific they're working on and it's sort of results be damned in terms of the box score.
Yeah, I think with Kikuchi, and we know what kind of year he had last year, and so the Mariners sound like they're really surprised. I guess everyone else was too, that the velocity wasn't there, and so simplifying his windup and throwing it easy. I mean, it was. I saw Service had a comment where last year he had to really force it to get it up to 93 or 94, and it seems like it's coming easier now with what he's doing. So it's encouraging to see that. And we know about his season last year, the birth of his son coming over from, or daughter, I'm not sure what exactly he had. His father died too, mm-hmm. and then making the transition from Japan. He wasn't what we expected, and yet it sounds like he's ironed some things out, worked on things in the off season, and maybe we'll see the Kikuchi we were hoping to see last year, this year.
Julio Rodriguez is a star of the future in everybody's estimation. You get a chance to see a little bit of him out there, and here's Jerry DePoto's assessment of him so far.
Oh, Julio's huge.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's done growing. You know, he's getting 19 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we signed Julio, we had a feeling that, you know, we signed him as a center fielder. He has played center field to this point in his career. He's particularly athletic. But he has gotten bigger and bigger, and you know we'll list him. He's 6'3", maybe 6'4" now, and physically he's going to be an even bigger man. It's the power is there, the arm strength is there, the athleticism is there, and the confidence. You know he has a great personality to be the front man, so to speak. He's not afraid of the camera. He's not afraid of the adulation. He shows really, I guess, growing leadership traits, and still so young. There's a lot in front of him. But yeah, he's a big dude with big strengths, and we feel like he's got a chance to be a star in this league.
Not afraid of the spotlight, not afraid of that adulation. He and Kelnick are going to have to battle for that front runner status because that's what we hear about Kelnick. He's very self-assured, he's very confident, and almost bordering on arrogant in some people's estimation. But sounds like you got two peas in a pod between those two that could both be stars.
Yeah, I'm looking for, well, everybody, those are the two names that we hear all the time, and Kelnick being a little farther ahead than Rodriguez. Rodriguez has been, he's 0 for 4, he's got 3 strikeouts, apparently hit one pretty well to center field today, but the fortunes of the Mariners are on these two guys, and so we're hoping that they'll, I'm hoping Kelnick will see him toward the end of the year this year maybe. He looked good yesterday. I mean, he looks pretty ready, and so we'll see. I know they're both young, but that's the thing. It's going to be weird this year because we know the results aren't going to be there on the field for the Mariners, the major league team, and so you got to look at the Modesto and what they're doing there, Arkansas, Tacoma, all these different guys, and so we'll see how it goes with those two guys.
Yeah, we'll have to take a trip down to Tacoma. I don't want to go to Sacramento, though.
You're not that
motivated. We keep saying we're going to go to Tacoma on a Thirsty Thursday.
Thirsty Thursday.
For $2 beers down there.
Yeah. So, Kelnick, 20, and then Rodriguez, 19. I mean, these kids, I always felt like baseball players were cocky. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it in a good way. Because I lived in a house. You know, Stanford always had a really good baseball team. And when I was there, they won a national championship one of those years. I can't remember if it was 87, 86, 88, somewhere around there. They always had good teams, but those guys were always cocky, you know, and they just, and when it got to the point where, oh, it's time to back it up with a fight, well, then they tap out. But for the most part, they were always that way. That helps you, I think, in baseball. And we talked about this on Friday. Jim, you're gone, but we were talking about Dustin Ackley. Remember Dustin Ackley always looked sad about
the
play?
He was not cocky.
No, he was not cocky. So, I mean, I like seeing that from these kids. It was cool watching Kelnick hit yesterday. I mean, he's a really confident kid up at the plate. You can just tell his body language, everything. But Rodriguez is only 19, man. I didn't realize.
Yeah, big kid.
I knew these guys were young, but holy smokes. Like he said, I mean, I remember the story. Dr. J went into college at 6'4". Julius Erving came out at 6'7". So, I mean, everybody grows at different times. And – So, yeah, we could see this kid get even, you know, bigger, more physical type of player. So it's going to be exciting to watch these guys down there. But you're right, Bob. I mean, the thing about Kikuchi is I just don't think you can undervalue how much of a problem that was for him coming from Japan and the differences. I mean, remember we heard the stories that Japanese pitchers would, you know, go up on the roof of hotels and throw during, you know, days off. And,
right.
You know, they were constantly working, and now, you know, they're treated much more. They're sort of put under glass here, and rightfully so. But, you know, he had to adjust to that. The passing of his father, now he's a dad. I mean, just all of those things. And, you know, the untrained eye probably can't see all those little things that he's working on that that DePoto was talking about. But it just seemed like afterwards, Service was really happy about a performance where he struck out the first two batters last night, but yesterday. But, I mean, the little things are kind of hard to see.
Yeah.
But
except for his windup, you could see the difference there.
You could see that, definitely.
Yeah. One more quickly from DePoto, just talking about he feels like they're on track with showing the fans what it is that they're trying to do here.
We've gone from largely what was considered the worst farm system in the league to what has generally been regarded now as one of the best. And we are deep. We have done very well in the draft and in international signings. We have done pretty well in what we've acquired in terms of young players and trades. And it's we don't feel like we are contingent on any one player getting over that hump or realizing stardom for us to be good. There's so much volume here, especially with the young pitching and the athletic middle of the field players, that we couldn't be more excited for where we go. And we don't feel like it's 5 years away. And that was the real critical part of this, was to do something that had you know, tangible impact in the here and the now, that when we line up in 2020, we can, our fan base can, our front office and executive level can see the result of what we're trying to do.
They're going to need to. I mean, in an uneven season at best in terms of the play you expect to see, and it's not about wins and losses, which means there's going to be a lot of losses. You've got to have something to cling to as a Mariners fan. And you've got to see something in these kids, you know, whenever they get called up, whether you start the year with Evan White, you get a chance to really zero in on him and J.P. Crawford and Chad Long, and then eventually it's Rodriguez and eventually it's Kelnick or however the timing works out. But you got to attach hope to those individuals. And
even yesterday, just with the Root Sports broadcast, seeing Evan White, I'd never really seen Evan White. And you see how good he is defensively over there. Love watching a good first baseman defensively, and so Evan White, that's...
You didn't see that with Vogie?
No, I did not see that with Vogie.
I wasn't able to pick that throw from Seager, though.
Yeah, that one hit the cut of the grass, though. They said it took a goofy hop.
That's what they said. I'm not seeing it from Evan White.
You're already out. You're already out on him.
I'm just kidding. He looked great.
Meanwhile, the Astros got a small taste of what the fan experience could be like for them this season, and they didn't have much tolerance for it. We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, and as I tell you every time, it's free. You just download it to your phone. It's right there for you. Take us with you. You never miss a moment, because when you miss a little, Jim, you miss a lot.
Yes, you do. That's right.
Yeah. Hey, welcome back, by the way. We just jumped into the show. We never got a chance to say.
Yeah, we had Paul Moyer on, and it's good to be back. Had a nice week off. My daughter got married up in Suncadia on Friday night. And
Went off without a hitch.
We had a fun weekend up there. Yeah, she's got some really good friends, a lot of relatives I hadn't seen in a while. So, yeah, it was a fun time.
And more importantly, we heard the dance that Jim had been prepping for months and months and months. At least you did it perfectly.
I did. Brooke kind of screwed up one of the moves there. But no, we worked with...
did you point it out to her?
Yeah, I did.
Of course you did.
Yeah, I should know Carly's last name, but Carly, former Seagal, and Seagal, she helps with teaching the Seagal's dance instructor. And she worked with us for a few months. We saw her four or five times on this little choreographed bye-bye-bye thing we did. The Seahawk receivers did a better job than Brooke and I did with,
did they?
With our bye-bye-bye. But, we did a slow song, and then we broke into bye-bye-bye. And, it was really – had a good time up there.
Good, man. I'm glad it
went
well.
Tears of joy, I guess.
What's that?
Tears of joy, I guess.
There were tears of joy. Yeah, I had a hard time walking her down the aisle, but
that was the hardest part. So it wasn't the speech. It wasn't the dance. It was.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's just something with dads and their daughters. I don't know if I'll feel this way.
Not for me.
No, it will be. You watch. When Kendall's walking down that aisle, it'll be the same for you. But no, it was tough. And they do this thing called a first look now. I wasn't really familiar with that. Usually when you see the bride for the first time, it's when you're walking her down the aisle.
Right.
But they do something now called the first look where they take the dad and you go outside and then you turn your back to your daughter and then your daughter comes up behind you and then you turn around and then, you know, you just, wow. It's pretty cool, though.
Oh, they did that for me when I got married.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had her come down the aisle and then I turned around and they took a picture. It was like your first impression. What if you make this weird face like,
what are you doing with your hair?
No, she looked terrific. And then
I'm sure she did.
Dave, you'll appreciate this. She was standing there with a decanter and she had a really nice saying about our relationship that she had inscribed on the decanter. And then she was also, that was in her left hand. And her right hand, she was holding a bottle of Jack Daniels.
That was a proud moment for Jim.
Yeah, it was a proud moment.
I like Dave implying that you'll take your daughter down at a rapid pace and hand her off and say, take her.
No. I'm just joking about that. I would say, though, I would have some advice for the young man.
Right, we'll leave that one there.
Get out.
Run.
No, I'm kidding. You know why I say these things about her? Is because she's most like me.
She can take it. She gets your humor.
The kid that's most like you. That's you see all the things about, you know, that you don't like about yourself.
Yeah.
And so that's why Kendall and I butt heads, but we're most alike. So.
She gets you.
Definitely be crying. Tears of joy.
Yeah.
Well, another group of people that may be crying in the way of whining throughout the season would be the Houston Astros, because they've been getting treatment on social media and comments from other teams, and they've already signaled that they're tired of it. And it's like, man, you better buckle up, Buttercup, because this is going to be a long season for you guys. But Jose Altuve gets booed in his first spring training.
Jose, he's
the face of this as much as Carlos Correa said. Oh, he didn't use it. He didn't do it. As I maintain, Dave, they're all complicit.
Are they all complicit? Yeah, they're all in on it.
But here's how that went for him.
The second baseman, number 27, Jose Altuve.
That's a minor league park or a spring training park with, you know, a handful of fans. What might it be like when they play the Yankees or when they play, you know, any other team that's got a massive, angry fan base?
Aren't those fan bases pretty much mixed? Like when we're down there in Peoria, it's pretty much half Mariner, half Cub fans. There's a lot of people from the Midwest. So that was a pretty significant boo there.
Yeah, it was the home of the Tigers in Lakeland, and I read a story from the Detroit Free Press that said that it was the loudest chorus of boos that they'd ever really heard there in Lakeland.
For a spring training game.
Yeah.
And he's such
Well, usually you don't hear boos. You don't hear boos at a spring training game.
You know what
game.
You do hear at spring training games, though? Trumpet.
The trumpet. The trumpet guy's back.
The guy is back. Yeah, I used to drive Jim nuts. Or did you like him?
No, I like him. Oh, in fact, I want to
Harden. Matt Harden.
We're going to be down there in 3 weeks. Danny and Paul are down there this week, but I'd like to interview the trumpet guy.
And ask him what?
Well, I don't know.
Why?
Thanks for the silence there,
why
Bob.
Why
don't you just be a good teammate and say, you know, that sounds like a good idea. Because I wonder why that guy comes to every game. I want to know more about him.
I'm responding on behalf of our listeners who we have to entertain with interesting guests and questions, so I'm trying to think. As Jim would say, if I'm a guy on 405 sitting in my car and they're telling me, hey, we got a guy who blows a trumpet out there and nobody knows who he is coming up next, am I excited?
Okay, here's what I would say about the trumpet guy. There might be somebody sitting on 405 going, yeah, I'd like to know more about him. The trumpet guy interview, I guarantee you it's going to be one of two things. It's either going to be really good or really bad. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's just like, you know, you hit a home run or you strike out.
Yeah. What do you picture that trumpet looking like?
I just like a French horn. I don't really feel like it's a trumpet.
I think it's plastic.
No,
I'm not even sure who you're referring to. So.
Every spring training game, there's always a guy who, I don't know if it's in between innings or what. No, it's during the broadcast. You can hear him go, dot, 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 dot. It's like the charge thing, right?
Does it sound like a kazoo or something? Or does
It just doesn't sound like it would come from like a really good brass horn. It sounds like it's coming from something plastic.
A child's toy.
Well, see, we could ask him.
Yeah, see, I want to know, Jim. I will read your article. I'll click on it. I'll send it out to all my Twitter people. Oh, yeah. Wait, I don't have that.
Yeah.
Never mind. But I'll send it to people in my family.
You going to write a story about him?
425 says nobody wants to know about the trumpet guy.
And that guy's probably sitting on 405 right now.
360 would be more entertaining to listen to three guys talk about him.
They call him Bugle Man.
Bugle Man.
You know who
Bugle
wouldn't
Man.
Like it is Matt Harden, because Matt Harden used to work on the board for the Mariners for years.
And he railed against them.
Oh, he just hated it.
Here's one more. Back to the Astros story. Mark Teixeira, former member of the New York Yankees and the Rangers, and Angel says it's not a good look when the Astros, because what happened, the signs were being taken away. The Astros were playing in that first game that you just heard a little sound from. They were playing the Nationals. The Astros were billed as the home team in this. So they had a ballpark worker confiscate signs from heckling, that were heckling the Astros with signs, and ones that said, like, Astra.
It wasn't like, even that bad.
Yeah, but they were taking the signs away. And this, again, in spring training, so Mark Teixeira say, yeah, probably not a great idea.
You think it's a good idea to be taking signs like those away from the fans?
No, because it shows you have very thin skin at this point in the season. And this is only going to get worse when you're on the road. When you are in, you know, places like Texas in your division, Anaheim, Oakland, your division foes, you're going to these places three times a year. They are going to hear it from those fans. So you better develop some thick skin. And that's one of the reasons I think they brought Dusty Baker on here. This is a leader. This is a guy that's going to tell these players, hey, listen, guys, you have a job to do.
Yeah, asterisk is what they're going to be begging for by the time they get to the middle of the season, because they're going to hear and probably see much worse.
Do you think it'll die down by the middle of the season, though?
I think it depends on how often they're seen by that opposing fan base.
Well, if they get some kind of raw skin reaction, somebody gets mad or yells, then it's going to, you know, start ramping back up again. But, yeah, you absolutely have to just ignore it if you're any of them. And just because, I mean, the second you show that they're getting to you, oh, my gosh.
They're
going to
ramp it up more.
Blood's in the water.
I just hope they get the full-on A-Rod treatment
when he came back here.
The fishing pole with the money and the whole thing. Seattle really threw a party for him.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, man, when one of them or any of them go into a slump, that story is going to be, oh, I guess that's the player they are without cheating.
Yeah.
Whether it's true or not, right? I mean, these are still talented players. Altuve can hit. Springer, Correa, all these guys can hit. They're good ball players. But like every other player, they could go through a tough stretch, and you're going to just automatically see it. You're going to hear it in the stands, and it's going to be, oh, well, they don't know what's coming. So I guess this is what happens.
Well, so they said something about taking the signs away?
Yeah, because so they said asterisk.
So they're still saying... people are saying, so the Astros are still stealing signs.
Ah. Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm.
You like that one? You like it? Yeah. So, also, we're getting lots of love for the trumpet guy. So,
oh, they want him interviewed now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm. They want to hear about the trumpet guy.
Okay.
Bugle guy.
Altuve was cheered twice today, though.
Was he?
When he struck out and made an error.
That's how you win him back, Jim. Yeah. Screw up. That'll get him on your side. Then you'll hear some cheers out there. All right, coming up, we're going to talk some football. John Clayton is out, but Paul Moyer is going to sit in for him today. We'll get to that coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
Well, the team is back together. Jim Moore here today, so let's see if we've learned more with him here or if we were better off when he was gone in the way of learning.
What do you think, Jim?
Okay, let's find out.
I'm kidding.
I can't wait to find out.
What did we learn today?
Well, we had some technical difficulties, and we learned that Dave will do whatever it takes to keep the show running smoothly.
So, that was pretty cool, too.
That's the voice of...
Dun, dun, dun. That's what you're waiting for. How's that?
That's good. Keep that going. I'll just talk over you. There you go. Jumping in. Teamwork right there.
That was
there.
Funny. I like that.
Yeah.
That was weird. Like, do you ever see that Saturday Night Live skit where the TV people, the monitors go out so they don't know what to say?
No.
Oh, my God. It's hilarious. Matthew has seen it. And it's like TV people don't know what to do unless they have a script to read.
Right.
Teleprompter.
Yeah, and so they just start freaking out, and then they take it to an extreme where they're like, I think it's Will Ferrell, he eats the cameraman. You know, they just go crazy because they don't know what to do. So I'm just trying to be light on my feet there. You know?
There you go. You jumped right in, saved the whole segment. It was going to go down in a ball of flames had you not done that.
Yeah, I'm going to send you that clip tonight.
Okay.
Also, like a shout out to Matt for he handled that pretty quickly.
I've never seen Matt make a mistake.
You looked a little panicked. You looked panicked.
That's not true.
No, you don't make
you
mistakes.
You hide it very well then, because I knew it was somebody else's fault when that happened.
What else did we learn?
We learned Jeff Schwartz's social media advice for athletes.
It's so silly, man. Look, guys, if you're going to be on social media, man, A, you got to learn how to argue better. A lot of people, not just athletes, you guys argue. And B, you got to stop being so sensitive, man. Stop searching your name on Twitter. It's not good for you.
There you go. That's in response to Jermaine Effetti, who took issue with him for some reason after Schwartz said, yeah, he's going to get paid.
How do we come across Jeff Schwartz?
I used to have him on Clayton's show. I think the first time I had him on, he had written an article about concussions from a player's point of view.
Okay.
And yeah, just he's kind of blown up since then.
I like him. I don't know what it is.
I think he's good.
At first, yeah. I'm like, oh, who's this guy? Some offensive lineman. What does he know? It's funny the way he put that. And just he's not sensitive at all. You get the feeling like you could directly disagree with him, and he's not going to, you know, like, lecture you and tell you to go read his article over again.
like Joel Corey did. No, I feel the same way. I've never blocked anybody or muted anybody. I just kind of go, you know, if I'm going to say a bunch of crap, then people should be able to say whatever they want to say too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I'm with you. I've only blocked one person. But he's...
Who's that?
Anyway. I know who Effetti took a good shot at him too about riding his brother's coattails this stuff. And he just got really sideways with him, and Schwartz is like, I said you were going to get paid. I don't understand.
Yeah, and he didn't get defensive about that part either.
It was more confusion, like, all righty.
What do you think Effetti would think of Joel Corey calling him serviceable?
I don't think he'd respond well.
No.
Based on previous responses we've seen, I think it'd be poorly received.
Next time he Google searches his name, he might see that pop up.
Joel Corey will be his next target.
I don't know why you would do that. If you're a player, why would you get on Twitter? And why would you...
Yeah, there's nothing good happening there.
We've talked about sometimes their families bring it to them. I don't understand why you would do that to someone.
I've had people do that to me before when I played. It was a coach. He's like, oh, man, you see what they said about you? And I'm like, no, Reggie, I do not. I did not see that because it was Reggie McKenzie. And I was just like, that's a crappy thing to do.
Well, by the time it gets to the player like you, it's not exactly what was said.
Yeah, it's the game of telephone, right?
Yeah,
everybody's interpretation of what was said. So by the time it gets to you, it's really bad.
Well, and I think for a lot of these players, sometimes their families and, you know, what are supposedly friends are bringing them that information. Yeah. You're not helping them by doing that. That's just my little public service announcement there.
What else did we learn?
Well, I think we're going to learn this now. We didn't talk about it in the moment, but Dave pronounces this word differently than I do, and I want to hear what you guys think.
And then he would go out and take his lasso on the road and rope statues and things. And it was like, oh, this guy's kind of entertaining. Then he hurt himself on a motorbike or something.
It's a lasso.
It's a lasso.
It's a lasso when you get it in a circle and you're going over
your head on the rope. You made it fancy.
Matt,
it's fancier.
Am I wrong? Am I outvoted 4-1 here? It's a lasso.
You're wrong.
Oh, no.
There's only 1-0 on lasso, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's two.
There's two S's and an O, I believe.
Oh, you're right. There is two S's and one O.
But I like the way you said it. It made it sound fancier.
A lasso.
Paul Moyer says dinference.
You're right.
Throw Paul under the bus.
Am I right?
I caught a couple of them today.
Does he say dinference?
Yeah, there's an N in there.
I'm always like, hey, there's only one N in the entire word.
Oh, Paul. So you've pointed that out to him.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there were a couple today. And I looked at Dave each time and went, din?
Dinference.
Yeah. I like how he distracted, though. See, he took all the attention off him and threw Paul under the bus.
You know what? I'm still going to call it a lasso. I've been calling it that since I was 4 years old. I'm sticking with lasso.
I picture a French cowboy.
Lasso. Anything else?
Yeah, we learned that Jim let his daughter know that she messed up on her wedding day.
And more importantly, we heard the dance that Jim had been prepping for months and months and months. At least you did it perfectly.
I did. Brooke kind of screwed up one of the moves there. But, no, we worked with...
did you point it out to her?
Yeah, I did.
Of course you did. Did you do it in a just
she
kidding?
She admitted it, too.
Did you say, hey, nice job there?
Well, I looked over, and I was real proud of myself because I was doing the backward thing and then with my arms doing the roll thing. And then I looked over, and she was doing this, you know, crossover step. I was like, no. You do the backup move first and then the crossover step.
You were saying that mid-dance?
No, I was just thinking it.
Oh, okay. And then you let her know afterwards.
Yeah.
I have to say, when you did a demonstration for us earlier today, they were like, Dave and Bob were like, oh, that's actually better than
you
what
you
showed
good.
Us
it
before.
It looked much better than when you were,
they were
doing
impressed.
Little bits and pieces before. It looked like this is going to be problematic.
Yeah, but I'm bad white guy dancer. I am. But I tried. Yeah. And I'd had a few pops, so that helped.
Don't cast aspersions on the entire old white man race.
Why? You're horrible too, I heard.
No, I'm unnoticeable. Nobody knows. Nobody sees.
Just blends in.
I'm just, yeah. Everybody's looking at Shannon dancing.
Yeah.
He's really a prop at that point.
That's right. That's right.
Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right, there you go. That's it for today. I want to thank our guests, Paul Moyer, Jeff Schwartz, and Joel Corey for joining us on the program. If you missed anything, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click the podcast button, then click on our picture. It's right there for you waiting each and every day. We're back tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Man, Wyman is my dude.